and relieved all his suffering by imparting blissful spiritual instructions. 28. Sri Markandeya Uvacha. Oh, together? Sri. Oh, no. Okay. Okay, I'll go along. Sri Markandeya Uvacha. Aho Ishvara Lilayam. Durvi Bhavya Saririnam. Yan Namantishitavyani. Stuvanti Jagat Ishvara. Translation. Sri Markandeya said, "It is indeed most difficult for embodied souls to understand the pastimes of the universal controllers. For such lords bow down to and offer praise to the very living beings they rule." Purport. In the material world, conditioned souls strive to lord it over one another. Therefore, they cannot understand the pastimes of the actual lords of the universe. Such bona fide lords have a wonderfully magnanimous mentality and thus sometimes bow down to the most qualified and saintly among their own subjects. 29. Dharmam graya yitum praya pravaktaras chadehinam acharanchyanumodante kriyamanam stuvanticha. Generally, it is to induce embodied souls to accept religious principles that the authorized teachers of religion exhibit ideal behavior while encouraging and praising the proper behavior of others. 30. Naitavata Bhagavata Swamaya Maya Vrittibi Nadushyetanu Bhavaster Mai Na Guya Kamyata. This apparent humility is simply a show of mercy. Such behavior of the Supreme Lord and his personal associates, which the Lord effects by his own bewildering potency, does not spoil his power any more than a magician's power are diminished by his exhibition of tricks. And 31 and 32 together. Srishvedam manasa vishvam atmananu pravishyaya gunai kurvadi virmati karte vasnapna dridyata tasmai namo bhagavate Sri Gunaya Gunatmane Kevalaya Dvitiyaya Gurave Brahma Murtaye. Translation. I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created this entire universe simply by his desire and then entered into it as the Supersoul. By making the modes of nature act, he seems to be the direct creator of this world, just as a dreamer seems to be acting within his dream. He is the owner and ultimate controller of the three modes of nature, yet he remains alone and pure, without any equal. He is the supreme spiritual master of all, the original personal form of the absolute truth. Purport. The Supreme Lord releases his material potencies, and by their interaction, creation takes place. The Lord remains aloof as the supreme transcendental entity. Still, because the entire creation unfolds according to his design and will, his controlling hand is perceived within all things. People thus imagine that God is the direct builder of this world, although he remains aloof, creating through the manipulation of his multifarious potencies. Om Jnana Timrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sakrachatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Stute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumati Srila Vibhav Prabhuti Namine Shri Shri Vrindata Vivira Pada Pad Pankajada Daini Prabhupada Anupadaya Namah Shiva Valve Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Sanyavani Pastor Tadesha Kani. Hare Krishna. So, these string of verses are very variegated in their train of thought, and so many subjects can be derived from them. But the first thing I thought of when I started looking at these verses is to go back from the beginning of the Bhagavatam and see the trend that's there. So one of the trends that I found is from the very beginning is the offering of prayers and obeisances to one's superior. From the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, that's where Sukadeva Goswami started by offering prayers and obeisances to his seniors. And coming up more into the Bhagavatam, the same trend is there. And then they would offer obeisances to the Lord, offer different respects, different glorifications. There's so many prayers are there throughout the Bhagavatam. And many of these glorifications appears to be very, very simple. It doesn't appear to be very, like, of any great deed, but it's just a transcendental glorification. One such that I personally like is appears in the Narasimha Kavacha. The source is unknown, but it's stated there. Omam Brim Kromum Hataka Tataka Kesha Jalapadoka Lochana Badra Dikanaka Sparsha Divya Singha Namastite. And the meaning is very simple. I offer my obeisances unto Lord Nrisimhadev along with Lakshmi, who sometimes fly in the sky or sometimes move on foot. His mane hair glows with a glowing brilliance, so with a golden brilliance. So it appears to be a very, very simple prayer, but it glorifies the activities of the Lord. We even see this in Vedic culture, where this glorification is there. With all the kings, they would have trained musicians and particular successions of professionals that glorifies their activities, even though many might be mundane, but it came from the trace of Vedic culture. Like in the third canto of Bhagavatam, with the marriage of Kardamuni and
Devahuti. They have this glorification is there in the 33rd verse of the 22nd chapter. It talks about how the king would be awakened every morning by musicians singing of with Shanai instruments, and they would glorify the Lord and the king also. They would glorify him. And in that way, his day would begin by the glorification. And they would sing his glories all over. Even about a year ago, my daughter had me watch one documentary on some different types of music in India. And one type was where they were glorifying the leaders. These, you know, they would glorify the leaders of their province or state or their king. And they did it in their own language, but with the translation, we found that it was completely mundane, talked about their activities and whatever. But the idea is there of offering respects and glorification to their Lord, their king. So it's a trace that comes from Vedic culture where the same thing is there. And as we come up higher into the Bhagavatam, into the 10th canto, we see elaborate glorification of Lord Krishna. So it's very, very elaborate, and so much details are there. Even though in the Garga Samhita you have so much more details than appears in the 10th canto. And so the glorification of the Lord is there, the offering of obeisances. So that trend comes up, you know, from offering obeisances to one senior, then you come up to offering obeisances to the Lord. But here, coming into the 11th parts of the 11th and here now the 12th cantos, we find a different level of reciprocation, a level of reciprocation where glorification is given to the Lord's devotees and to all living entities. And not only giving to the devotees, but by whom? By the Lord himself. So this is a very, very rich culture that probably none of us were exposed to before. That Srila Prabhupada brought this culture of very rich reciprocation amongst each other. So then Mother Mukhya was making the announcements this morning about glorification of the Lord's devotees, something to that effect. If one verse came to my mind, and I thought, you know, within my mind, I said, thank you, Mother Mukhya, for helping me to start a class, because that's what we would be speaking about. So one verse that came to my mind is the very first verse in the Adi Puran, where Krishna told Arjuna, Yome bhakta jana parta na bhaktanas chate jana mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas te me bhakta atamamata. That one who claims to be my devotee is actually not my devotee, but those who are the devotees of my pure devotees or my servants, they are actually my devotees. So this is the, we can say, the postgraduate essence of Vedic culture, of offering obeisances and respect to all devotees and all others. Not only devotees, but all others. I have on my wall this very nice quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. I'll just read the whole thing. Okay. Yeah, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is saying here, look within, amend yourself, rather than pry into the frailties of others. In this world of Maya, averse to the Lord, full of trials and tribulations, only patience, humility, and respect for others are our friends of Hari Bhajan. So respect for others, that includes everyone, not only human beings. When faults in others misguide and delude you, have patience, introspect, find faults in yourself. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. So this is in his Dasho Ashmi prayers. He's one of the greatest devotees of our times. And he gives such an instruction, at least I want to try to take it seriously. So these are some of the like the higher principles of Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada is bringing to us to adopt. Anyone can feel spontaneously they would want to offer respects and obeisances and glorifications to a very advanced devotee or to different forms of the Lord. It's just spontaneous, everyone would do that. But we read the other day with Markandeya Rishi offering respects and worship to Lord Shiva's followers, the ghosts and goblins. I mean, the mere thought to me, you know, the mere thought of these personalities is like I want to keep far from. But the Lord is, you know, setting an example here in the Bhagavatam through his devotee, Markandeya, to offer full respects, dandavats, worship to even such creatures. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is indicating here, just offer this level of respect to others, every other living entity. It doesn't only relate to devotees, not only relates to karmis. I know sometimes my family would yell at me because I work a lot on the phone at home. And when I'm dealing with customer service and, you know, I would lose patience with them. And sometimes I would yell and scream at them and they would tell me, just have patience, you know. So initially I think, well, with devotees, yes, I'll have patience. But with these outsiders, and especially when they bring up these kind of pretty, in my opinion, stupid thoughts and irrational arguments, then like I don't have much patience. But after, you know, like reading things like this, it forces me to try to adopt a different level, because for one, we may not know who is who. I remember one time we heard the story of Japatak Maharaj chastising his sannyas disciple who was responsible for the cooking with the big festivals in Mayapur. So he was cooking some kind of, in his eyes, some kind of a low-class sabji. So Maharaj chastised him. He said, you should offer first-class everything because you never know who are coming here to take this prasadam. They can even be demigods in disguise. They can be very saintly devotees that we may not know or understand or know how to respect. So always give the best you have. And always try to do your best. And there's one saying that we should try to give the best we have, not try to give the best. So in that way, we always try to do the best that's within our facility. And if that's not the highest level, then that can be understood. But at all stages, we should always try to give. We always try to reach this standard. So, and of having respect for other devotees, it's such a wonderful thing. And as we engage more and more in this way, we can feel a change of heart. I just the other day, I just randomly picked up some prasadam and I brought it over to my godbrother here. I just brought it and gave it to him, but just doing that, it was like I don't know how to explain it, but it was like an experience that has a very soothing effect on the heart. He's not somebody you can say that is very significant. He just, in the background, does pujari service all day, and sometimes you'd hear his name announcing. But other than that, you know, appears not to be so significant. like a big Maharaj or, you know, big senior devotee. But by the simple act of me doing, I just offer him that some prasadam, I felt so, you know, like so transcendentally peaceful by that simple act of giving. And I want him, Satchinanand Maharaj told the story of the land of the givers, that every time they reach each other, they would give a little rag. So it appears as just this little piece of cloth they would give. But it's the gesture and the meaning and the intent behind that that magnifies so much and makes everyone so touched lovingly and spiritually. Of course, with Kali Yuga coming in between, it can kind of change things around. Like my daughter was telling me this story. Her teacher told her at school the other day that there were two persons, they were arguing, they found some item randomly. So one person, and this took place at the end of Dwapar Yuga. So this one person found this item, whatever jewelry, some kind of valuables. And he was saying, no, this doesn't belong to me, that you take it, I think it belongs to you. And the person number two is saying, no, you know, this belongs to you. And they were trying to give it back to that person, they were going back and forth. So as they were arguing, they passed Dwapar Yuga and they stepped into Kali Yuga. And immediately as they stepped into Kali Yuga, the mentality changed. And number one person saying, no, this is my item, give it to me. And then number two saying, no, this is my item, that this belongs to me, I dropped it. So this, you know, this mentality can kind of change. But with this transcendental process of Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada gave, it can bring about a change. It can, if we stick to studying these books and stick with the association of devotees, with all it might be a little difficult sometimes here and there, but Srila Prabhupada started this magic. You know, think about what Srila Prabhupada has done. He started this Krishna consciousness movement, he started this home, bringing people from all walks of life, bringing people from all nationality, all backgrounds, and brought them together to live harmoniously. If you think about that, it's the United Nations couldn't have done anything, you know, very close to that, or not even remotely close to. But Srila Prabhupada has done it. And now we have the charge to maintain it by practicing it ourselves. So it's a very sublime culture. And here what is more striking to me in this verse here is that here Markandeya Rishi is saying that though I'm not satisfied by Lord Shiva glorifying me in this way, that please say more. So initially one may think, okay, this is a very proud step, okay, I am being glorified, let me hear more of it. But the higher principles, like they're all different levels of Dharma and understanding. So this one is getting into a very, very high level of Dharmic understanding, where Markandeya Rishi is saying that I'm not accepting this praise because it's directed to me. But what is satisfying is that you, such a great devotee, is able to recognize religious principles when they are displayed. So therefore, glorify these principles more. Glorify these activities more. So this is going to bring about a level of understanding that if you're envious, you cannot adopt it. So this is one thing, I think, was it Mother Ekadasi talked about envy the other day, yesterday or something? Yeah. So I read one paper lately by Jayapadak Maharaj where he he talked about these six principles, lust, anger, delusion, lust, anger, greed, delusion, pride, and envy. So out of the six, five can be used in Krishna consciousness, but envy cannot be used. So all the other qualities can be used, but if one has envy in their heart, they would not be able to appreciate or accept something that is going on around them. And even you can have all different arguments that, yes, I'm not envying this person, but I'm just pointing something out, that this is the fact, and I'm going to drive this point home because it is a fact. I'm not envious, I'm not, you know. So I was discussing with Radhakund the other night the same topic, and so we talked about one story of Srila Prabhupada that took place in Hawaii. I believe it was Hawaii many years back. The temple president there, apparently he was doing something illegal. And Srila Prabhupada went there to visit, so his GVC men were there in the room, and Srila Prabhupada was glorifying this devotee, this temple president, all his good qualities. And someone in the room was shaking his head, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, you have no idea what he's doing." "Oh, Prabhupada," you know, then told Prabhupada what he's doing, that you think he might be good. And then Srila Prabhupada said, "If you're envious, you may leave the room." This is one of the stories in his Lilamrita. So it appears as though, well, the devotee is pointing something out, you know, and it is a fact. They can prove it, it is a fact. But what is Srila Prabhupada indicating by making such a remark? That if you're envious, then you may leave. Don't say the bad things of someone. So Srila Prabhupada talked about this Bhakti Lata Beach. That if, you know, we have to fan this spark of spiritual life. If anyone has some good qualities, we try to magnify it. The faults, we try to subside. And even though it depends on your position, whether you're a manager or so, sometimes you might have to point it out. But then there's time, place, circumstance, atmosphere in which one can do these things. So sometimes for us, you may think, well, I'm just saying the truth, I'm just saying something. But if you look deep within the heart, if you try to sift out, analyze very deep, then we can probably recognize where there might be some envy, there might be, or in my case, all the time is envy. So this quality is very difficult to apply. If it's there, if it sprouts there, it becomes very difficult to apply in our lives because it creates the barrier. It's like the last straw that breaks the horse's back in spiritual life. So there are many ways that this can be, we can try to work to break it out. I'm not sure if it was Maharaj or Madamati Didi was talking the other day about at least try to practice it in principle, at least try to practice so that even though it might not be from the heart, but it might be just something you know from the books and you're trying to apply it. So it might be sentimental in the beginning, but it's a good starting point. So we have to start from somewhere. And that's a good starting point. And eventually, practice makes perfect, becomes perfect. So, some time ago, I saw this. There was a YouTube clip with this little Indian boy. He doesn't appear to be more than like 10 or 12 years old. But he made a presentation of what are you expert at and how can you become expert at that thing. So you were saying that if you want to become expert at something, you have to practice it. If you want to be expert at law, you don't just become expert, you have to practice, and your skill becomes sharpened in that field more and more, and similarly any other field. And then he also mentioned about envy, that if you want to become expert at being envious, you have to practice it, you know. And it helps because it's already there in the heart, so it's easier to practice. But still, you have to practice to become expert at it. Or if you want to become expert at respecting devotees or glorifying, he didn't say devotees, he said others. He said you have to practice it, even though it might not be natural for you. But if you practice, then you become expert, you become good at it. So if these things applies in Krishna consciousness, then there's so much benefits. So especially this part of the Bhagavatam, as we're going through, I'm learning to like it more and more because it's enriching our culture that outside of our home here, you don't see the likeness of it anywhere. You might see some kind of a sentiment of being very, very courteous, that if you go out there, something somebody, you know, you say or you give an idea, they support you. Oh, that's very nice, do it. You know? This is one thing in American culture, one of the shocks that I got, as I came from a country that no one applies, no one shows you psychology. If you're ugly, they tell you plain on your face, you're very ugly. They don't say, oh, you're interesting or you're very pretty and try to polish. They tell you exactly as it is. But when I come to America, you know, things are a little polished or if you're doing something wrong where I came from, they will not say, well, yes, it's kind of okay, it's nice. They will tell you plain it's wrong, very plain, straight, no hold back. And actually, in Vedic culture, this is called mukhya vritti, tell you exactly as it is. So, that here, if you do something, they'll say, yes, it's okay, go ahead, yeah, that looks nice, it sounds good. I would like to eat this thing. Yeah, that's a good idea. Oh, I want to eat stool. Yes, that's a good idea. You know, they always give that kind of a support that creates a falsity just to be your yes man. But, so, that doesn't work too well in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work so well. Even sometimes, you know, that part have to be there. We have to encourage, we have to be mild. But, you know, we go in the right directions. So, anyway, I want to go through some more of these verses. So, like verse 28 is saying, generally it is to induce embodied souls to accept religious principles, that the authorized teachers of religion exhibit ideal behavior while encouraging and praising the behavior, proper behavior of others. So, here Krishna talks about this in Bhagavad Gita, that whatever a great man does, the common man follows. So Krishna himself sets that example. In many places, we know so many, I'm pretty sure we can come up with so many places, where Krishna himself shows that. As he talks about, he said he doesn't have to follow religious principles, but he's doing so that others can follow. And he himself set an example of glorifying and being the servants of his own devotees. Like someone sent for Father's Day this picture to me of Krishna carrying his father's shoes on his head, bringing it to his father. You know, happy Father's Day, Dad. Here's your shoe on my head. So, you know, he's glorifying his own devotee. And then when they had the Rajasuya sacrifice, the big sacrifice, what was Krishna doing? Anyone remember what was Krishna's service in that? Yes?
He was washing
everyone's feet. I mean, that was like one of the last tasks you would expect that, you know, he takes up. He washes everyone's feet. And even when in the Mahabharata war, just before the war, all options were being explored to stop it. So finally, what he did, what was the last step? That he himself became the messenger and the servant of the Pandavas and went to plea with the Kauravas to stop. He personally went. He took that role with all, according to the Mahabharata, which I'm not sure if is, you know, I haven't read like the authorized version. I just read one I found somewhere. That when he went there, he was being insulted so much by Duryodhana and others that he's just, we don't even know who you are. you're just the son of a milkman. You don't even have any Kshatriya background. You're such a low class person. And so many different degrading things that was said to him. But he still took that role and he still went on. I was also remembering how many times Srila Prabhupada, one time is described by a servant that somebody, I think it was servant or someone, was doing something or being loud or something outside, and Srila Prabhupada came with his folded hands and telling, you know, please be quiet, please don't do like this, please do like that. And they were saying that how many times, like hundreds of times, Srila Prabhupada has done that. And he always did it in a very, 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 very humble way, very, like, most meek. And repeatedly, with full patience, that he would train his disciples by very, very patiently telling them how to act, how to behave, you know, things like that. So that gives a lesson for us to learn to do the same. So in these set of verses that, you know, talks about glorifying the devotees and their qualities, we can go on and on. I remember when I first moved to this community, one of the first experiences I had with the passing of a devotee, I believe it was Param Brahma Prabhu. I'm not sure how much of you were here then. And I moved in 98. And after his passing, we had this big session, really big session. And they were all talking about his glories. And this happened about maybe 6 or 8 months after I moved here. And I never knew who he was until after he passed. Then it talks about all his glories, so much good qualities. So then I thought to myself that, why wait until a devotee passes away before we glorify that person and able to understand, you know, their depth of contribution to Krishna consciousness and their level of Krishna consciousness? Why not do it when they're alive? So I started that program where once a month we would choose one devotee and we would glorify. But some or the other, I became very advanced and I gave up that program. So, I always think about it, you know, wonder if that can be restarted. You know, it's such a nice program to just glorify devotees and able to appreciate or share. It's such a rich culture that you don't really find it so much outside of Krishna consciousness. So these are some thoughts. There are many more, but I guess time is out. So these are some thoughts I have. If anyone has any questions or comments, or I would also like to ask if anyone can share some references of the Bhagavatam where devotees are being glorified or this level of respect is offered. So we can start with Trivikram Prabhu. You have a comment or a question?
A comment and question.
Yeah, microphone is just now coming. But go ahead.
The comment is, Krishna was born as a peacemaker, but he really wants to war.
Yeah.
See, he's born as a peacemaker, but he really wants to war. It's important. That's why he actually came up for that war. The question is, why was Lord Shiva and Uma visiting Arjuna?
That's one point I was going to bring up. So your first comment that Krishna wanted the war. Yes, we understand that, but in context of practicality and what happened is Krishna set that example in the context of what we were speaking today. Krishna sets that example that, you know, I'll take any position that is necessary to do the needful. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when he, in the early days, they're talking about, okay, you know, they have to cook and they have to clean the kitchen. So he said, let us all take turns. One day we'll do it. And he put up his hands, I'll do it on Thursdays to clean the kitchen and take care. And then the other devotees put up their hands, I'll do it this, that, and next, the other days. So Srila Prabhupada was willing to do the needful. Even one time they hired some outsider to cook for the devotees. Srila Prabhupada said, why did you do that? You could have told me. I would have been happy to cook for all of you and clean and do everything for all of you. You know, so he was willing to take that position regardless of status. So that was the topic of the matter discussed here, that Krishna was willing to take any position necessary to do the needful. So, yes. And then the other point which I wanted to bring up here as to why Uma and Lord Shiva visited Markandeya. The very foremost of the reasons is Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastra Hoy, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. So Lava Matra, that word Lava Matra, what does that mean, Lava Matra? A moment's association. By the moment's association of a devotee, then all success is achieved. So that's why it's stated here in the verse, in the former verses. That's the foremost reason why Lord Shiva and Mother Uma came to visit Markandeya, just to get his association. You have any arguments on that? Okay. Yeah, so this Lava Matra is the very important aspect of Krishna consciousness, to take association of other devotees. And there's a big difference between associating with devotees and associating with like-minded people. Actually, right in this seat, several years ago, Jayadvaita Swami talked about that, about association of devotees. I don't know how much of you are here and remember that conversation. He generally gave very short classes. One time he gave a record-breaking, I think, 11-point-something or 12 minutes class in Mayapur. Yeah. So he gave very short classes, but this point stood out very clear in my mind when he says that one should associate with devotees, which means that in the association of devotees, perform Krishna conscious activities, and that becomes association of devotees. But if one is among devotees and perform mundane activities, is not generally categorized as the association of devotees. Let's say, for example, okay, we're all devotees here, let's just go and see this Karmi movie. So we're all devotees, we're together, we're devotees. No, that's not like the association. So, but to get the essence of what a devotee has to offer, to see a devotee, to take darshan of his lotus feet, to touch his feet, to hear from him transcendental knowledge, that is the actual association. And the foremost of that association, what you can do from your part, is what Lord Shiva did here. Glorify that devotee. So that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. The essence of what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says, what I was reading earlier. The glorification of devotees, despite they might be bad qualities, that doesn't matter much, because the good qualities, transcendental qualities, can be so big that all the faults you can find in a devotee can be compared to like a tiny black spot. So even though the black spot, it would show, because a devotee's background is a whole big white sheet. So the tiny black spot may show, but still, one with a neutral heart should compare without envy, again without envy, compare that tiny black spot with this whole big white sheet and see what portion of involvement that tiny spot plays. And like that, you know, we can see and we can able to appreciate each other. Yes, Tithidi Muni Prabhu? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the gist of our topic was, who did it? You know, not only what was done, but who did it? It's Lord Krishna himself that took that position of a messenger, took that very, what we say, low-class position. Yeah, to try to do everything, yeah. Just like our dear Jayananda Prabhu, they would make him temple president, and then he would, Bhakta would come, he would train that Bhakta up, make that Bhakta temple president, and he'd go back to his garbage service. His most enthusiastic service was to packing and cleaning the garbage and take care of the garbage. And anyone who tries to take that away from him, it didn't really work too well. So, and it was one of the most humbling services, you know, to do that, to clean up after the devotees, to, you know, take care of what we can say, the dirty work. So, is there anything else? Is there anyone who would like to share some references of the Bhagavatam or so, of glorification, how devotees glorify each other? I know in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita you have this whole, it's all this whole string of glorification of one devotee to the next. In the Bhagavatam there are many also. So, anyone like to share anything? So, anyway, I guess we can stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.